This podcast is brought to you by Money Control.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Simply Save, the money podcast at Money Control, where we talk all things money, investments and your savings. You're listening to Season 5, where we are getting you some juicy secrets of fund managers, how they pick and choose stocks beyond all these numbers and boring annual reports. I recently caught up with Harsha Upadhyay, who heads equity funds at Kotak Mutual Fund. He may be a low-key and quiet fund manager, but Harsha comes across as an analytical fund manager who knows how to ask the right questions to the company CEOs and managements. The one thing Harsha stressed upon, some interesting examples he shared with us, and you get to hear about them in this podcast, is that they got to do their homework, snoop around, meet companies as well as their competitors, and yeah, get out of their offices and away from their computer screens. If you want to become a better stocks picker and want to know how your fund manager gets the job done, then I suggest you listen to this podcast right away. Hi, Harsha, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Kaisal.
So, Harsha, tell me, if you have to go beyond balance sheets or beyond annual reports, and when you have to pick a company to choose, what appeals to you? What would turn you on? What would turn you off in a company? And how do you assess the unknown?
There is no straightforward template that you can use for all companies. I think over a period of time, after having gone through various sectors and businesses, you will understand that these are the particular things that you need to look at in a particular business. Similarly, when you have interacted with managements over a period of time across sectors, you will know what are the critical things that you look for. Our approach has been to evaluate whether to invest in a stock or not on three premises. One, B, which is business. Two, management. Three, valuation, BMV. In case of business, what we try to do is to understand the entire industry landscape. What are the drivers from an economic perspective which drive that particular sector or not? What are the tailwinds? What are the headwinds? How that industry landscape is changing? So in that regard, we try to go and meet the company, and also we try to meet many other competitors in the same industry.
Even competitors also?
Yes.
You may not invest in them.
Yes. In fact, many a times you will see that the companies where we have no investments may give us a lot more details and inputs. Okay. Because usually when a company knows that there is a particular shareholder coming and speaking to them, there is a possibility that they are guarded, or maybe they will not want to give all the negative details. But when you ask same questions across industry and over a period of time asking the same questions, you will know that what is going on, what is being said and what is not being said. Because it is also important to understand whatever they say as well as whatever they don't want to say. So that's something. So both management quality and business you can evaluate this way. For evaluating business, you can also do channel checks. You can go and meet vendors, you can go and meet customers, you can go and meet industry associations, you can go and meet anybody who is involved with that company in the past or in current times. You can also speak to ex-employees, you can speak to employees.
So some of these opinions could be a little colored, no? For example,
obviously,
ex-employees,
I think,
are there, competitors are there.
Yes, I think in investing, I don't think you should take everything at face value. Especially the good things that come out from management on their own business, etc. You should always take it with a pinch of salt. You should evaluate whether that is true or not. Similarly, if ex-employees are cribbing about a particular way of doing business in that particular company, you should also take that with a pinch of salt, because you know that the particular employee has not been with the company anymore. Yeah. And maybe there is some bad blood. So you will have to put your checks and balances, but I think trying to get information not just from balance sheets, which is also important when you are looking at valuation, you need to be aware of the financials, everything. But whether a particular company is trying to mislead by window dressing the numbers is going to be understood only when you do all these checks. Similarly, when a company is saying something and that is not reflecting in the numbers, then there is also a case to really look deeper.
Okay.
So I think it is just about trying to connect all the dots that are available. Some of them may be completely irrelevant information, but as you keep doing, I think you will understand that some are really important. And also some of the decisions how the management has made, for example. Rather than talking about just the decision, we try to understand what circumstances or what assumptions led to that particular decision. Especially if something has gone wrong, then you need to understand what were the circumstances at that point of time and what are the assumptions that the management made and what are they trying to do today to come out of that problem.
And these kind of checks and balances, the qualitative aspect, would you say that it is quite important in your entire process of stock selection?
It is very, very important. I mean, along with financial statement and understanding of the financial numbers, we make it a point that we have at least one interaction with the management frequently. That is at least a quarter. It could be through an analyst meeting, through a conference call, through going and visiting their premises, going to a factory. It could be any of these, but we generally make a point that at least we'll have one management contact.
In a large size company, small size, mid size also?
Yes, wherever normally, we have a large interest,
normally
we do
a
that.
Large size company, you know, some might say that there's already enough research out there. You know, you might not want to meet the Chandras of the world, the Infosys management, the Wipro management. They've been around for a very, very long time. So no, even I think then also you feel that...
Yeah, most of the companies have a regular investor contacts. Okay. So we participate in that. Okay. In some cases, we may go and visit their factories, okay, their stores, etc. Okay. We may do some of the channel checks that I mentioned, okay, through their vendors. Okay. Customers, etc.
Okay. Do you ever come across a situation where you know, the numbers are squeaky clean, balance sheets, annual reports, everything fits your criteria, but when you go and meet the company, when you go and do these kind of checks, you find things that you may not be very comfortable with, and so then you avoid that stock?
Yes, there have been cases like that, especially in cases where management intentionally doesn't want to give the correct picture. They are trying to portray a great business or a great future and great past, whereas in reality maybe that's not true completely. So in those cases, obviously some of these qualitative research that we do.
Can you give me a few examples?
For example, there was an company in the FMCG segment. It was a beverage company. It's still around. It came out with an IPO.
Okay.
And at that time itself, we were a little confused because the kind of market share that the company was claiming was not in line with what we were seeing in the market. As in, we were unable to see some of the products or almost all of the products that they were selling in any of the markets that we visited.
Okay.
So in the first management meeting itself, we inquired about why that disconnect is there. The reply from the management was, since we all sit in Mumbai, we may go and visit some of the modern trade channels. We are not actually seeing that product, and they are very large in hinterland, and the tier 2, tier 3 cities is where they sell their products. And if we visit some of those, then we will be able to see that. And also the kind of capex that they were talking was kind of little more than what an FMCG company otherwise would do. They did an IPO. IPO was successful. They raised the money.
Did you go to the hinterlands to check the claims?
I'll come to that. So within 6 months, they came out with another QIP. So we were wondering, FMCG company is a very, very less cash intensive business. So in that sense, why are they looking to raise more money? They said they need to increase their capacities. They need to increase their distribution.
Did you
network.
Buy the stock in the IPO?
No.
Okay.
And then when we actually started doing more research, going to tier 2, tier 3 towns through our branch network, or whenever people would visit other cities or towns, we got those information. No one was able to substantiate that those products were having similar kind of market share in those markets. In many markets, it was not even visible. Even in markets where it was visible, it didn't seem like it had so much of market share.
Okay.
So this was more of a qualitative input that we got. And at the same time, the financial numbers started showing a little bit of question marks.
Okay.
The debtor days started to go up.
Okay.
And the average debtor days for this particular company was almost 5 to 6 times more than that of an FMCG company.
Okay.
And they kept saying that it is because they are new to the industry and they are small in size, they need to give a little more credit to the distribution chain, etc. But obviously there was a red flag. I mean, we never invested in that. And finally, we today know that there was a inflated number in terms of market share. There was financial fraud. They didn't really pay the taxes that they were claiming to pay, etc. And the stock has fallen, maybe has become a penny stock. So, I mean, you will find such examples across industries. There is another case, technically sound company doing good business in an auto ancillary space. But whenever we went and met them, while we got a good feedback on their technical capabilities, but people, especially the competitors, when you go and meet the competitors, when you find out about a particular company, you always get to know both the positives and negatives. If you get positives, obviously you should be very happy, because very rarely somebody appreciates another competitor. But if you get negatives also, you should not just dismiss it saying that it's not a good feedback. You should inquire. That's where we kept getting feedback that the promoter was more involved in buying land, real estate, etc. Rather than running the business. While the business was doing fine, I think there was a diversion of focus, as well as later on, as we found out, there was money was also moved to some of the other sides of the business.
Okay.
So, I mean, there have been examples. I think I won't say that those cases are too many, but whenever you have some suspicion, I think it's better to try and check many other sources. Not all of them will be relevant, but at least you will get a little more information, and if you can join those dots, I'm sure you'll get a better picture.
So when you go and meet the management, you go and meet the company CEO, one, do you just meet the topmost management, or do you tend to sort of go down the line and speak to other second rung management also? And number two is that when you go and speak to the CEO or the MD of the company, I mean, what are the attributes that you would want to see in him? I mean, it's just like a job interview that you would take. But obviously, I mean, here you have to do much more rigorous evaluation, because you're investing public's money.
So we try to go and meet management at all levels. In some companies, it may not be possible. It may be only the investor relations person, or maybe CEO, MD, or CFO. Those are the people who are meeting. In some cases, maybe the business heads are also meeting the investors. In many cases, we may have our own informal network of past employees, ex-employees, or maybe the current employees may be at a lower level, etc. So we'll try to get all those inputs. Few of the things that we try to do is asking the management the same questions every time that we meet them, and also ask the same questions in the same industry when you meet other competitors.
Okay.
So then you get to know what are the key drivers that everyone is looking at. And also, especially if you get a feedback from a competitor saying that this particular management is very good at doing this, or I respect this company because of these reasons. I think that's a key input that we can get.
And when you go and talk to companies, do you give them an indication as to how much you're going to invest in them, how many shares?
No, not at all. But if you have already been an investor in the company, obviously the company would know how much we have invested into. In some cases, the company may have done their own research and they may see where we have invested in that particular sector. That's also possible. But whatever publicly available is available to everyone. We don't share any more information. I think the qualities that you look for is whether there has been any consistency in terms of what they have been saying to what has happened in the past. And also whether the decisions that they are taking today are coherent in terms of the overall strategy of the company.
Okay.
I mean, just to give a simple example, maybe on a capital allocation, maybe they will say all the good things that you want to hear, but they are going and doing unrelated diversification.
Okay.
That's a clear indication. And similarly, they will say that we are tightening our belts and we are trying to control our working capital management in tough times. But when you actually go and look at the numbers may show something else.
Okay.
So various things will have to be cross-checked. And more importantly, you need to see whether there is an alignment with shareholder interest. In case the management is well compensated, or if they have shareholding in the company, then obviously it's very clear that they are also working for the betterment of the entire shareholding community. But there could be cases where promoter interest and shareholder interest are aligned, but the management may have its own drivers.
Okay.
So those are some of the softer aspects which you will not be able to get it in the first meeting. May not. Sometimes you may never get it. But the idea is to try and find out some of these things which will be helpful. So integrity, honesty, the coherence in terms of the policy making, and whether there is a clear hierarchy in terms of decision making, because that's also very critical in large companies. If it is too centralized, for example, then many of the decisions may not go right. So as the company grows in size, we need to see whether there is a good second level, third level in terms of the management. If that is building, that obviously gives you confidence that maybe the business will continue for a longer period. And also you need to check with competitors, as I said, or maybe the industry bodies, consultants, etc., who have worked with the company or who have worked with a competitor, to understand the kind of respect or kind of negative feedback they may have.
And you have to devote so much of time and energy in your research. I mean, that's not...
Yeah, that's why it's impossible to cover all companies by a single person. So while the fund manager may be the face of the organization or the visible face out for the outside world, the research team is the backbone of any investment house.
And when you hire your research team, do you hire technical knowledge people, like who understand the technicalities of, let's say, an engineering heavy company or an industrial company, or let's say an automotive company, somebody who has experience in automotive, automobile industry?
We have not seen too much of attrition. So the resources that we have had have continued with our organization, which has been a very strong point for us. But today I can say that they may not have worked in an automobile industry, but they have covered automobile industry for 15 years.
They understand
the dynamics of the industry, which are the key drivers, what the companies have been seeing across different cycles, etc. And also, wherever possible, we try to get analysts whenever there is an attrition. We try to get analysts with relevant experience. Because it's very difficult for an auto analyst to start go and cover information technology or a pharma industry. Yes, I mean, people will be able to do it, but there is a time period until when they will not be very productive.
Learning curve.
So to that extent, we try to get people with relevant experience. And also, off late, we have been hiring at the junior level, so that we can put them along with a senior analyst and train them in a particular industry space. So those are some of the things that we are
doing. How much do you rely on sell side analysts? All fund managers meet sell side analysts, right? The research in many fund houses is a mix of internal research as well as ideas that your sell side analysts would give you, and then you execute them. How much do you rely on them?
I would say that for information gathering, we rely on them, but we may not completely agree with their analysis. We may not completely go by their recommendation and the target price. That's how we work. We have a team of 12 analysts. The average experience would be 14, 15 years. I would say that they are as experienced as fund managers in some cases. And they have been covering the same set of stocks for these long years. So to that extent, there is in-house edge that we have created. And that is critical to us. There could be ideas that come from outside. There may be sell side brokers who give us ideas. There could be, when you are meeting companies, you may get an idea about another company. When you are meeting an auto ancillary company, you may get an idea about an auto company. So all those will be part of the overall research that we do. But for our investments, when it comes to taking a view and taking a view on the valuation, target prices, etc., we rely only on our in-house research. And that's why we have created in-house research. Because the outside research may not be tailored to your needs. Our researchers know what is the investment mandate of each fund, what is that each fund manager is looking to when he's investing or when he's trying to sell. So to that extent, I think our in-house research will give us an edge if we keep improving on that, rather than relying too much on outside research.
We'll talk about corporate governance a little bit in detail. And I wanted to start by asking you, like, about proxy advisory firms. They are getting more and more prolific in the past 2 years. They have been commenting on some of the practices that some companies have been doing. And of course, you must be also independently tracking such developments. So what about proxy advisory firms? Do you ever take their advices seriously? Do you take cognizance of them, or do you call them? Do you talk to them to understand more about a particular practice that has been called into question?
I would say this is also similar to the research that we get from sell side. Yes, we do obtain research from some of the proxy advisory firms. But it need not be that we just go blindly with their recommendation. Mm. We try to understand the rationale. In some cases, maybe we'll have a discussion with them to understand what exactly is leading to such a recommendation. But end of the day, there is a voting committee inside, which is where the investment team is participating. Mm. And also, we are very careful that we look at what a minority investor would look at in a voting scenario. Mm. And accordingly, we vote. So there have been cases where we have taken up some issues with the management, and the managements have also understood the gravity of the situation or the seriousness of our protest, etc. And there have been cases where they have reversed their decisions. For example, I'll talk about one of the MNC companies, large MNC company, where they came to get a approval on the royalty payment to the parent company without any limits, without any time limit, without any upper limit to the percentage of royalty that they would pay. And we were not comfortable with that. We suggested that there has to be a mechanism where you will be able to segregate the kind of costs, because their argument was parent is helping, which is natural, but parent could be helping in technology, parent could be helping in R&D, parent could be helping you in selling the product, etc. And depending on the life of the product, the expenses could be very different. Okay. And there has to be mechanism and a transparency in terms of how they try to charge that. Yeah. If that is not available, at least as a minority shareholder, we need to know what is the maximum royalty that we are going to pay from that company.
Yeah.
And for how long that is going to be valid. And you can't have a perpetual royalty cap. So I think the company also understood. I'm sure that there must have been similar questions from other institutional investors and other investors. And finally, they agreed to put a cap, and also for a finite period, it was approved.
Okay.
So we have been doing whatever we find is against the interest of minority shareholders. And slowly, I think across the board, some of these issues are getting highlighted. Not that every management wants to kind of push through some of these unpleasant things, but maybe they really don't know whether they need to give so many details, because in the past they are not used to give so many details.
And you come across a situation where you are invested in a company, and through your continuous dialogue and research and understanding of the sector and the company as you go along, as a shareholder now, some things would have changed. I mean, the rationale that was there for investment at the time of investing is now no longer there. And I'm not just talking about valuations, I'm talking about the qualitative aspects again.
Yep.
So then, do you come across such situations where you have to take a tough call and decide whether you want to be a part of this company or not?
Yes, there have been many such cases. I mean, there was one EPC company.
What is EPC?
The Engineering Procurement and Commissioning.
Okay.
So it's a construction company.
Okay.
That company was focused on cash flows. When they came and met us, when they started showing their financials, etc., we believed those financials at that point of time.
And you bought the stock?
We bought the stock. The order book was fine, there was visibility, everything was going fine. But over a period of time, we sensed that the cash flows were not really coming through. The receivables were going up.
Okay.
There were question marks about the company's ability to complete some of the orders. There were question marks about whether the company has really used all the money that they have raised in the construction business, or have they diverted. So there were a lot of question marks of that kind. And we questioned the company after every quarterly results.
Mm.
After a couple of quarterly results, what they were saying and what the numbers were showing clearly were not matching.
Okay.
Then we went and visited one of the construction sites.
Okay.
When we tried to visit a construction site, the company offered a particular site.
Okay.
We went there. We also went to another site which was not in their interest, as in they didn't want to showcase it, but we happened to visit that. And we got a completely different picture of what was happening. There was hardly any work that was going on. While the company had claimed that it was one of the projects which was doing very well and moving smoothly, there was hardly any activity that was going on there.
Okay.
There were a couple of employees who were very, very disgruntled, saying that the salaries have not been coming through regularly from that company. This was a complete revelation. Because on one hand, the company was claiming that the order book is increasing, things are fine. While there was little bit of issue in the financials, we didn't know that the issue is so acute that even the salaries are not getting paid.
Okay.
And then that was one of the triggers that...
which is generally one of the last things to happen in an otherwise troubled company, that people don't get salaries also.
Yes. And I still remember the stock price was in three digits.
Okay.
And we tried to sell a little bit in the market. It was an illiquid stock.
Okay.
And the promoter came back and asked, there is a particular person whom I know and he is interested in buying the stock because he believes that the future is very bright, etc.
Okay.
So that was another trigger for us to know that there is something wrong and they don't want the supply to hit the market. They may have thought maybe that by saying that there is a buyer, we will stop selling.
Okay.
But we continued selling and today stock is a penny stock. At least we could get out at a higher level. Although we incurred losses, but I think we got out much earlier than...
So to be a good investor, you're saying it's not just enough to do the due diligence at the time of investing, but you also have to keep periodic checks.
Very much. I think it has to be a continuous exercise.
You can't take it for granted just because
you've
got a stock.
Not at all. In no stock you should do that. I'm not saying that there will be negative developments, but I'm saying even the valuations can change, the financials can change, business dynamics may change, the competitive landscape may change. So there are so many moving parts. You can never just invest and forget about it.
Harsha, how soon in the company cycle are you willing to sort of invest? I mean, are you open to investing? Do you invest in very, very young companies? Extremely small size companies, or do you want them to attain a certain size and scale and after that only you're comfortable? Is that such a thing when you invest?
No. At our fund house, we have different investment mandates. For example, our small cap fund, it is mandated to invest in small cap companies, which essentially mean that maybe they're small in size, maybe the business track record is not that long, maybe the business model is yet to be fully proven, all those will be there. But when you look at the large cap ones, we generally tend to go for proven business models, scalable businesses, and where we believe that there is a certain degree of competitive advantage for that company to continue to remain in that category. So for large companies, yes, we generally tend to look for proven business models and the business models which we understand. There will be many large companies where you may not understand completely how the business dynamics is going to unravel.
Yeah.
You will take a view, but you may not immediately go and invest in that particular stock.
Okay.
So that's how. So depending on the mandate, we will look at all kinds of companies.
Okay.
For example, there may be IPOs. It may not have a listed track record, but being in that business for few years earlier, they would have created a certain level of track
record. Or insurance companies, for instance.
Yes. So then you have to analyze it in a different way. So again, I'll come back to my opening remark where I said there can't be a straightforward, a simple template to analyze all companies and invest into. Each industry is different, each business is different. So you'll have to make your own adjustments in terms of how you evaluate them. And it's not that once you have that template, everything is done, because those templates could also change for that industry. Because there could be a new driver, new way of doing the business. For example, in financial services, everything was physical until a few years back. But today you have digital services which have completely changed the business model. So some of these disruptions can also change the entire business landscape. So you have to be aware of some of that as well.
Harsha, one last question I wanted to ask you. See, for fund managers to get an access to company managements, to be able to see things more qualitatively, in addition to, I'm saying, quantitative factors, it's easy because there's a certain size.
Institutional investors.
What about the small investor? What about the individual investor?
Yeah, I think whatever we discussed until now, an individual investor, unless he has got a management contact or he owns such a large chunk of shares, it will be difficult for him to do all of this on his own. So that's why we say that the institutional investors are better equipped to do research, because there is a formal research team which supports us. And also the risk management levels in an institutional setup is much more than in an individual setup. So to that extent, I mean, I would do a little bit of marketing here saying that, I mean, it's a better way to invest in a mutual fund.
I knew this was coming. As soon as I asked this question, I knew that this was going to come.
So it's better to invest in a mutual fund where you take a diversified portfolio.
And it makes sense.
Yes, because I mean, I'm saying as a fund manager, it will be impossible for me to go and visit all the companies that we invest into on a regular basis. That's why we have a research team.
And despite having a big research team, fund managers can also go wrong.
Yes, we do go wrong. And researchers also go wrong. So there is never a 100% strike rate.
Okay.
You can get bullseye in shooting or in archery. But in investing, if you get 6 out of 10, I think that's one of the better strike rates.
Okay. Thank you, Harsha, for your valuable insights.
Thank you, Kaisas. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That's all we have for you today, folks. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Over the next month and a half or so, we'll bring you many such conversations with some of our top fund managers around. If you have any feedback, anything to say, or any queries that you want to write to us, our email ID is mcpodcast@mw18.com. I repeat, it's mcpodcast@mw18.com. For more news, views, and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.